Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Chris Hannes joins me now on the Service Master by Cornerstone phone line. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is a Light Rail Coyote by the band Slater Kinney, a song about the city of Portland, or especially about an incident in Portland where a coyote got on the light rail for our visitors from Portland in town tonight.
Well, it is the Danny Green debut, at least we expect. He is questionable, as is Des Bain, as is John Conchar, for that matter.
Really, the Grizzlies' wing rotation has been questionable.
I would say highly questionable. Exactly right. So, what we expect to see someone run up and down. I mean, like when Jaren came back, when Dez came back, even there, you're sort of giving them one game is nothing, and then one game, the first game back, is particularly meaningless. What do we expect tonight? Or when do you expect him to be introduced? Let's say he plays. What do you think his place in the rotation will be?
Oh, I'm guessing he'll play, 12 minutes off the bench, sort of your fourth wing or whatever. I think they have to get him out there, like now. But they're not going to give him heavy minutes. And again, I agree, you can't really, make any judgments on production. Maybe you can't make judgments on anything. But you want to see someone who looks physically like not broken, right? Like physically up to moving laterally as a defender and getting around on an NBA floor. Like that's sort of your bare minimum you're trying to see.
Yeah, and as you pointed out, they know what they have already because they've been watching him. This is really more that we now will have get a sense of it. What was he last year? Before the injury, which was a torn anterior and lateral cruciate ligaments in his left knee, what was he?
He was in Philly's rotation playing, for the Grizzlies. Might have been starter minutes. I think he was playing like 25 minutes a game. Shot well from three. Didn't shoot a lot. He averaged 6 points a game. So not like a high volume guy, but shot a good percentage and soaked up minutes, played defense. Actually was more prolific as a shooter in the playoffs. Right before he got injured, he boosted his volume of shooting and at good percentages in the playoffs. Like he scored double digits several games for them in the playoffs. And so it looked like a guy maybe biding his time a little bit in the regular season and then sort of amping it up a little bit for the playoffs, which is not unusual for a veteran role player of that type, given his sort of history. That's sort of what he was. And if he got all the way back to that, I think you'd be pretty happy with it. But I don't. It's hard for me to assume coming. I mean, eight and a half months off of two torn knee ligaments. Who knows?
Do you put any stock in the if he comes back and can play credibly? He is also a veteran. Is the veteran presence thing real? You got the sense that Kyle Anderson played a little of that role, like in this mercurial bunch of swaggering Grizzlies. It's nice to have someone there who's a little bit of a wise old head. Does that have any significance to you at all?
I do think Kyle had moments where he could sort of settle things down a little bit. One of the differences there is Kyle could take the ball and settle things down and sort of and get you into something. He was basically like a 6'9 point guard. And Danny Green is like, I'm going to stand in the corner.
Right.
So it's a little bit different as far as that goes. I think the Grizzlies came quickly. This has been something that's a little bit misunderstood over time when I've heard people talk about it. They didn't make that trade because they wanted Danny Green and they wanted his veteran presence. That was just a contract they had to take. And they definitely contemplated buying him out in the summer. Once they got him in, I think they became enamored with him as a veteran presence. I think they found that valuable, you know, just on the plane, in the locker room, whatever, you know, right, in the practice court, etc. How much more valuable does that become in the context of playing? I don't know. I think it's a factor. I don't think it should be an overwhelming one in their decision making.
Has he, by the way, and I don't know the answer to this, does he go on all the road trips? Like, he's with the team all the time, or does he stay home to rehab ever?
I don't know if he's gone on all the road trips, but he has definitely gone on road trips.
Yeah. All right, so that is tonight. They play Portland. Damian Lillard's on a heater. Tell me about Portland.
Yeah, it's funny. Portland has basically changed the entire team, including the head coach, around Damian Lillard over the last few years, and they're exactly the same team they've always been. They are a top 10 offense and a bottom 10 defense. Damian Lillard is an all-star, averaging 30 points a game. The rest of the team around him is just okay, and they're playing 500 basketball, same as it ever was.
All right, and then we have the OG Anunoby trade stuff continues. It's a week from tomorrow. The trade deadline is a week from tomorrow.
Yeah, it's weird. It feels like the last 24 hours or so had been this groundswell of Anunoby Grizzlies talk, which we've been talking about for a month or whatever. But it seems like it's really bubbling up. But I can't find a single instance that seems truly sourced to anything meaningful. So I don't know if there's anything there more than I know or believe, or if it's just sort of this collective hive mind trying to come up with something to think about.
Let's talk about him real quickly, just as a player. Do you recall when you first, he was in the same draft, actually, as Dylan Brooks. He's British originally, although he really grew up in Missouri. He went to Indiana, had one undistinguished year at Indiana, and was the 23rd pick in the 2017 draft.
He had, you've researched this more than I have, but I can tell you from memory, he had a major injury issue in college.
Yep.
And he went lower in the draft than people thought he would based on the injury. He was someone who, before the injury concerns, people thought was going to go a lot higher than that. And he ended up falling because of the injury stuff.
His brother, Chigbo Anunoby, played in the NFL and then went to medical school. He was in the same draft as Dylan and Ivan Rabb. That draft, do you know what happened to the Grizzlies' first round pick that year? It was 2017. They had the two seconds.
I'd have to go back and look. Maybe it was from the Jeff Green thing, or maybe it was something else. Who knows? There were so many trades back then. Maybe it even been that John Moore Cleveland thing that finally came home to roost. I really don't remember.
So one of the tricky things about the trade is Dylan Brooks, whether he would be part of it or not. Do you assume, let's say we learn tomorrow that the trade has happened, would your best guess be that Dylan Brooks would not be in it?
Yeah, because to me, the question becomes, does Toronto place a value on Dylan Brooks beyond this is contract we need to match? You know, because they have to have a contract in it to start. That's going to be either Danny Green or Dylan Brooks, presumably. And then you add value to there. And so from Toronto's perspective, does Dylan Brooks, does he start the value proposition, or is he just starting the contract match proposition and then you add value? If Dylan Brooks does not contribute to the value proposition, there's no reason for the Grizzlies to put him in that trade. And so that's sort of what it comes down to. Even if you say, well, we think it would be problematic to have OG Anunoby and Dylan Brooks on the same team, well, find some other trade for Dylan Brooks, right? Where he would have value in the trade. To me, you don't move Dylan Brooks strictly as expiring contract.
And why would he have value to them?
You get his bird rights. He's an unrestricted free agent, but if you have a player, you have a leg up on re-signing them.
Right.
If they like him as a player and they say, you know, if we re-sign him this summer, it will be cheaper in a total contract than what we're going to have to pay OG Anunoby a year from now. So we get a similar defensive player at a roughly similar age, and we're going to pay him less, and we think that makes sense for us. I don't know if they feel that way or not, but in theory, that's what it would be.
But that is the tricky thing, because normally, if you were coming off of a player like Dylan Brooks at the trade deadline, because they're going to be a free agent at the end of the year, the the way you would get the most value for him is someone who's in contention who wants him as a rental. Like, that's normally as
right.
as and that's not Toronto. And so that's partly what makes it awkward. He clearly does have value.
That's why if Dylan Brooks were in this theoretical deal, so if this theoretical deal were happening, I just said that, you know, if Dylan Brooks doesn't have value for Toronto, you move him in a separate deal. The other possibility I didn't mention is it's a three-way deal, right? And so he's getting rerouted from Toronto somewhere else for additional value, you know, from a team that would want him for that reason.
Yeah, I've seen people send Dylan to the Knicks, and then the Knicks contribute to the pot that goes to Toronto because the Knicks, who are in the playoffs, would value him this year, put associate value with Dylan Brooks. They throw something that helps you get Ananobi.
I sometimes traffic in suggested trades. The fact that like 99% of what I write about that is never going to happen, I don't quite have the stomach to dream up multi-team scenarios. And so, like, that makes a lot of sense. And if I wanted to, I could do a bunch of that. But I just, you know, the odds of the simple thing happening are so low that to come up with the complicated one, I just don't have the time or stomach for it anymore.
He is obviously a meaningful defensive player and is a meaningful three-point shooter. Doesn't really do anything else. How much would he contribute offensively? Go ahead.
The thing about this team is you've got your top three players. And maybe there's some scenario, like, you know, the Kevin Durant thing we talked about last summer, where suddenly you're adding someone better. I think you're past the point of adding someone better. I think this team is going to be about John Morant, Desmond Bane, and Jaren Jackson, how good they can be collectively, how far they can take you. And so you're dealing with the edges of that. And so to me, the Ananobi thing, assuming that you could re-sign him, which obviously if you're trading for him, I would advocate doing so, that is upgrading the Dylan Brooks slot. That is, you know, it's still the fourth, to me, your fourth option. Now, does he want to be a fourth option? That's a good question. If he wants to compete for a title, he needs to be a fourth option. So he would be a really good fourth option, you know, if he's that. But that's kind of what you're looking for. You're looking to improve your offense around the edges with complementary stuff because your core is going to be John Morant, Desmond Bane, and Jaren Jackson. I don't think you're trading for anybody or likely developing anybody that's going to supersede any of those three in your pecking order.
Well, and then there is this question of where are the Grizzlies? What are the Grizzlies? Like, where do you value that fourth piece, upgrading that fourth piece versus whether it's Zaire or Santi or any of the cluster of first-round picks? You know, people talk about going all in, and it's just not a meaningful discussion because it comes down to the specificity of the player. You know, like Toronto went all in with Kawhi and won a championship. I guess Atlanta went all in.
Toronto did that move at a time when the team that they had built around DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry, some of these guys, that team had sort of stalled out.
Yep.
So your first iteration of your contending team had kind of stalled out. I think the Grizzlies, and this is actually, I think, what I'm going to write about next week ahead of the trade deadline. Instead of thinking about this year to year, I think the Grizzlies themselves and we should be thinking about it as iterations. John Morant, Desmond Bane, and Jaren Jackson are young enough that if you can keep them together for 10 years, you're going to have different competitive iterations around them. Like the contending team they have right now with those three players and other guys may be 100% different in terms of, you know, 4 through 15, 4 years from now. And so to me, it's about not thinking year to year, but thinking, okay, this is one iteration of this team. How do we maximize this iteration? And to me, that's this season and next season and like maybe the year after. And at that point, like Steven Adams probably gone and Tyus Jones is gone and whatever. And so I'm sort of thinking about it from like period to period instead of year to year. And so to me, Ananobi is someone who, you know, not only does he give you a boost this year, but he's under contract next season. And so he adds to the iteration. And some of the other, you know, trades I've speculated about do the same thing. I'm not thinking about it just in terms of this season,
no.
But I'm also not thinking about it in terms of 10 years. I'm thinking about it in terms of like 2 or 3 years.
And as we've said, those first round picks, Asante, whatever, I mean, are useful when they seem to be in the hands of this front office, because you're going to have less flexibility moving forward, financial, et cetera, when you know, people want to get paid and whatever. You're going to have to continue to fuel these future iterations, I guess. There is, you know, I don't know. Would you give up what two firsts and Zaire or two firsts and Santi and whatever contract in this deal for Anunoby?
Yeah, I think I probably would, because he's under contract next season, because of his age, because I believe financially, as I projected out the cap, you can re-sign him and Desmond Bain, or you should be able to. You should be willing and able to. And because I think there is a level, you're right, that you want these players coming back in to replace, just like you did replace Kyle Anderson or whatever. But at some point, you only have so many roster spots, and there's sort of marginal value as you go deeper. And so, yes, I think I'd do that. Now, would I do three picks?
That's the question.
That?
Three firsts and Santi and Danny Green.
Yeah, that's a lot. I think you can make a case either way on that. But, you know, contract plus young player plus two picks, that's a deal I think I would do.
LeBron's good. Are you gets triple-double, beats the Knicks. Are you interested at all? I'm not particularly in this he's going to pass Kareem thing, just because it's inevitable. Like, it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's funny. I listen, and at this point, this stage of my life, as this is established, I'm mostly just an NBA fan. Maybe that'll change as, you know, I shed other responsibilities and get back to other sports. But it's funny, I listen to podcasts, and they'll say, like, the Kareem all-time points record, the most hallowed record in basketball, and I'm thinking, where would that rank in baseball? Like the 75th most hallowed record? It's just not a sport that's like that, you know? You don't think of, like, you know, you think of, like, the baseball home run number. You, like, know those numbers. No one knows what the Kareem number is. I don't think basketball is a sport.
I don't even know the ballpark.
Statistical milestones.
Do you right now know what the Kareem number is? Like, you've been reading about it.
I had no idea.
Do you know, even within 5,000, do you know, like 2,000, do you know what it is? What is it?
Somewhere
37?
Around 40. Is it like 40,000, something like that?
I have no idea.
Right, this is what I'm saying. I don't know.
The number that matters, though, is number one. That's the matter. It's not that they're passing a hallowed number. It's that no one has ever scored more. And by the way, last night passed Mark Jackson and Steve Nash. He's now fourth in all-time assists. Meantime, the Pelicans have lost 9 straight. They were second not long ago.
They are on the verge of missing the play-in. How about that?
Then again, I just don't want them to get another freaking lottery pick. Like, it's ridiculous, you know? I want them to make the playoffs. This is preposterous.
So the best-case scenario here we're looking for is the Lakers to get up to 10. Now, I guess we need the Lakers. I guess you would have to have the Lakers make the playoffs completely to miss the lottery. So that's I'm willing to risk it. Let's let the Lakers get up to 10. Get up to 10 and, like, get win the 9-10 game and get to the one game elimination for the playoff spot and lose that game and just miss the playoffs, but have, like, the 14th odds or whatever. Then have the Pelicans miss even the play-in completely. And let's just – that's
– How would you feel about –
frustration for both those fan bases.
Very unlikely to happen. How would you feel about Grizzlies-Lakers first-round series?
I would not relish that. I know – I feel like this discussion came up last season as a possibility. Mm-hmm. It would be obviously lots of hype and lots of attention. But I don't relish that. I don't relish dealing with all the Lakers stuff. I don't relish the fear of, like, it's a playoff series with LeBron James, you know, and so that's not what I'd be rooting for. Give me Sacramento or Dallas or something.
All right. And then finally, I know you're off to cover the Tyre Nichols memorial service at Mississippi Boulevard Church. How do you even prepare for covering such a thing?
I don't know. And in fact, I don't, I've been outed as I'm going to cover it. I'm not 100% certain I will write. It's the kind of thing, like, when I went to that vigil, I told our editor, like, I'm not going to force it. I'm going to try to write something, but if I feel like I don't have anything to say, I'm just not going to do it. I'm sort of in the same vein. Like, I probably will write, but I'm not going to – if I don't have something to say, then it doesn't need to be said. Right. And so we'll see from there. I don't know. I'm going to do a little bit of, you know, reading and catching up on the news, and I don't know. I'm just going to keep my eyes and ears open and see what happens.
Well, I presume then we have a beat writer covering.
Yeah, yes. Unlike the vigil, I will not be. We'll have news coverage of it regardless, and so it's a little bit less. You know, do we want a second piece off it or not? We'll see.
That is That's how I felt when I went to the protest Friday night and ultimately did not write about that. But then it presented itself at the game, and then I did write about it. But I understand that feeling completely. I will say it's jarring to wake up. Like, I get the New York Times newsletter, like, you know, their version of Early Word or whatever is delivered in my mailbox every morning. And today it was about policing and scorpion type units across the country with a focus on Memphis, obviously. It is it is really something to see Memphis at the center of all of this. So best of luck with that. Thank you very much, Chris. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. You may or may not be able to read Chris on this. I am grateful that we have someone as thoughtful as Chris writing about this stuff. Chris writes about the NBA in a way unlike anyone else in this market. And but I almost like him even better when he is when he went to the Vigil and the things that he has to say. He's sort of, and you can tell talking, listen to him, that he has this anti-talk radio mentality. And so he doesn't just like to deliver takes. That's not what he does. I think Chris is almost, when he is weighing in on the issues that are in front of us as a city, at his most valuable. So yesterday it actually came down that one of us was going to go to the Grizzlies tonight because we have Drew Hill there already. Drew, the superb beat writer for the Daily Memphian, covering the Grizzlies. And then we had these, you know, the Danny Green debut and the memorial service today. And I said I was going to go to the Grizzlies. And it's mostly because I did write about Tyree Nichols Sunday. And it's hard in the midst of all of this to know what to say that adds value, that isn't just what everybody else is saying, that is insightful. And I think the sort of humility with which Chris is going to this memorial service to say, I'm going to keep my ears open, and if I have something to say, I will say it, but I don't feel the need to say something just to say something. I appreciate that. And honestly, if you like that kind of journalism, I would humbly, Ruth, suggest that maybe you even consider subscribing to the Daily Memphian.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.